Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Cole Harnaday.
Hello there.
And Nicole Lamb.
Hi.
How is everybody today?
It's good.
Yeah.
We survived.
We survived all this time.
We survived the total eclipse of the heart.
Yes,
and the sun.
Right.
The total eclipse through the heartland. I was thinking about driving down to Oregon.
You and everybody else.
I know. And I'm like, hey, that'll be neat. I'll go down to Oregon because I got family in Eugene.
Right?
You know, hang out in Eugene, drive up to Salem, you know. So, and then I just started hearing these, like, horror, like, predictions for how many people. Like, Oregon is going to sink a couple of inches.
Probably,
because more people are going to go there.
And I think all the parks actually opened up to try to, like, house all these people.
I've had a death in the family, and they had planned a memorial service for the 21st and rescheduled it.
Wow.
Because it was going to be down in Portland. Bumped it a month from now because, you know, it's just going to be chaos.
It's going to be madness.
Portland is off the beaten path of the path of the eclipse, but...
But it is where everybody is going to be driving through.
Yeah, exactly.
The prediction is that the interstate is going to be gridlocked.
Yeah.
Probably to the Washington border.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the last thing I want is to be stuck in my car on the freeway while the eclipse happens.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like the setting for a horror movie. Right.
Well, then everyone just gets out of their car and is like, what?
Right.
Like in all the movies.
And
then the end of the world.
You turn into a pile of dust like Night of the Comet. Night of Comet.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
So, and I also looked up all the hotels. Like, if you cannot find a hotel room, they've been booked for years.
Obviously, we survived, therefore we didn't see the eclipse.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so hey, here's a brand new segment I thought I'd start. It's a bit different than the weekly book report we do, but it's called Recommendation Corner. Because, hey, what are some good comics that teach you or that use extensively math? And I was thinking about this because I was thinking about that Squirrel Girl issue that taught you binary.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really interesting. So does anybody have any math-centric comic books?
So the main book that I would recommend that's relatively fresh, and there's three volumes of it, is Secret Coders by Jean Luen Yang and Mike Holmes. This is the same Jean Yang who did American Born Chinese and is also written and drawn for Avatar, The Last Airbender, the good one, not the live action one. And the whole series is basically created to teach you about mathematics and computer systems.
Mm-hmm.
And I've not read through it. Scott did, and he recommended it for like ages 15 and up, I believe. He kind of compared it to Encyclopedia Brown style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it definitely has that tone as I'm working my way through it. It's a fun style. And I think that's probably one of the most active books I could recommend for that.
Yeah. Right now, we're very science-heavy.
Yeah.
And learning about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did find a bunch of web comics that I would recommend that at least touch on the subject of mathematics a bit.
Right.
The main one is XKCD, which is insanely popular.
Love me some XKCD.
Yeah. It's, if you never heard about it, it's a web comic of romance, sarcasm, math, and language.
If the dude does his research.
You left out that Gene Luen Yang does Superman.
New Superman.
Yeah, and I was like, is that's yes, of course it is.
Same guy.
Because he used to be a high school teacher.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So it makes sense. He's the perfect person to do this.
Those of you listening at home, for the last couple moments, Cole's been pacing frantically back and forth.
Yes.
Because I was like, okay, I'm not going to stop Chris's discussion for my sanity's sake, but I'm going to get up and run to the shelves. And I could trust my tired brain.
Hey.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, buddy.
So yeah, XKCD is a great webcomic if you've never read it.
There's another one called The Abstruse Goose, which has a bit of math humor to it. There's a bunch of general science humor. My favorite was a photo that the guy made of where you are in the universe and where our broadcasts are. So, like, the further out you get, like, the first presidential broadcast.
Oh,
and if you're still in Alpha Centauri, you are currently getting, like, Community and and stuff like that.
That's
so that's pretty cool. Another one I didn't think about was Foxtrot. There's a lot of math humor throughout that. And Bill Amend has a degree in physics from Amherst College. So, yeah, there was. I found a few sites that listed a bunch of math comics.
Yeah.
And most of them were abysmally boring. So those three are the best that I can recommend without shooting my head off.
I didn't know that about Foxtrot. I mean, I know of it, but it came out after my like newspaper comic strip reading days.
When I did read it, I couldn't recall that many that had that kind of humor, but then I saw like a whole page of them and it's like, he snuck in a lot of math humor throughout that.
Great.
But yeah, I think right now, like Nicole mentioned, science is the main game, science and history.
And archaeology. Chemistry and everything.
There is The Imitation Game. The movie about that.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's heavily math.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
also one called Lovelace and Babbage, which is an alternate history about those two characters actually creating a computation machine.
Mm-hmm.
So that one's very math. But Secret Coders, I say, would be at the top of my list. So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody else have any math comics? No? All right.
Crickets.
There's a supervillain called the Calculator.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he's a DC character. He had a number pad on his chest and a like tube in the back, and if he punched a certain number, things would come out of the tube. He didn't last long.
Yeah, because everyone just kept hitting the clear button.
Yes. Or they kept doing the math problem that
says
equals,
hell on there.
Yes. Yeah, that says like, or naughty words or whatever, and you flip it over.
You turn them upside down.
The
8008.
Yes.
Yep.
The best use of him was that DC had Barbara Gordon as Oracle for the longest time. They wanted to make an anti-Oracle, so the Calculator become the evil internet guy. And they got rid of the stupid costume, and he was just the evil Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's actually good thinking there.
So there's no point of turning him upside down anymore.
Yeah. Solomon Grundy's holding him by his leg. He's like, what is it?
By bad word.
008.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Chris. That's some good comics there. Now, there was a thing that happened recently where it really showed the underbelly of internet society. Yeah. And,
which likes to show its underbelly almost every day.
Never scratch it. Never. It may want you to scratch its underbelly, but never do it.
It's like a pasty slob at the beach. It's just
dangerous.
That's me.
So anyway. Yes, it is.
There was an editor at Marvel, a female editor at Marvel. I don't recall her name at the moment, but she posted a selfie with her and a bunch of coworkers, and they just, you know, they had milkshakes like Friday after work, and you know, just like, hey, we're having milkshakes, and man, it rubbed people the wrong way for whatever reason, and I think she had to like disable her Twitter account or
get off of it for a while.
And that got me thinking, because you hear about these terrible stories all the time, and you're like, how are people just that big of a jerk? And you know, and I'm sitting here, and it's the sort of same reaction I had after like a lot of things I hear regarding politics. Like, what can I do? You know, because I am just one person in a sea of humanity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you see stories about just these internet trolls just making things bad for everybody, what can I do? So, like, what can I do? What can we do?
Well, in the case of Make Mine Milkshake, that was the hashtag that they came up with. A lot of Valkyries, who I've talked about before, it's women who work in comic book stores or are owners of comic book stores. A lot of people posted on their social medias with, you know, whatever drink and whoever, and so you make you normalize what the person was doing as normal, but you do it in a vast number, so you show support in that way. So that's a lot of ways that people do it.
I did see one of those images with a Dick's Drive-In milkshake.
Oh yeah,
which is great.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, that's one way that people have handled things, is just a vast amount of support for whoever who is doing.
The practice of trolling is, and I can't remember who said this, but it is a reflection of how very, very small we can be as people. And what I've seen, the ways that I've seen people succeed in defying that is with the magnitude of their bigness, because they drown them out. Right. You know, that's the mm-hmm. Make Mine Milkshake. Mm-hmm. It just drowned out whoever these very small, petty, drab, boring, heartless. Should I keep going? People.
I think so we get the point.
Edges. Yeah, you know, just absolutely drown them out, and that's why it was marvelous. And unfortunately, you can't always do that. Mm-hmm. But it really is, and it's very hard to sort of put it in a context of like, this is somebody being the smallest they can possibly be. Mm-hmm. How do we be bigger than this?
Yeah.
How do we be grander than this? How do we be mighty without playing their game? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. because one thing that has really bothered me since the election is how people don't know really how to deal with a bully on a grand scale. The best thing you can do to a bully, the quickest way to take away their power is to pretend they're not there. Mm-hmm. And if you keep making fun of the bully, if you keep firing back, if you keep trying to meet that bully on the same level, you're ultimately still empowering them at some capacity. But so it's like, how can you be bigger without being so small?
It depends on the level of troll.
Depends on the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have some stuff that you wanted to add?
Well, the thing that I would say, because I generally have a very pessimistic view on humanity, thanks to Bill Hicks and a few other people,
Bill Hicks.
Is that I will always expect there to be there's always going to be these kind mm-hmm. of people, is to create as many safe spaces as you can. Mm-hmm. And you create places where people can feel safe, welcome, and that bolsters them. Mm-hmm. And you need to create a counterweight mm-hmm. is the way I view it. Because like you were saying, ignoring is, I think, one of the best ways, but I've also been raised by someone who very particular said, no, you punch them out the moment they come after you. So not to promote violence, depends on your scenario.
It really depends. Sometimes silence doesn't work for some of these people. They'll just go to the next person. They'll just go to the next thing.
But short of violence, you can actively cut them out completely. Odd kind of timing on this was I just started playing some Team Fortress 2 again, which is, if you're not familiar, it's a game where you go in and you randomly get teamed up with like 10 people, and you go and it's like capture the flag with characters with guns, and people can hook up and just start talking on their chat. And went into a game and there was this guy who was just making the worst racial insults left and right for the sake of doing it. Mm-hmm. So the entire group booted him from the game. Just like, thank you.
Yeah.
Great. That's great.
Yeah. Just
first, I think a warning went out, and then he was muted, and then he was booted. So that's kind of like a bit more active than just mm-hmm. ignoring.
I wish you could do that in life.
Yeah, it's a forced ignoring, which actually that's what I would promote. Excluding those people, even though you should always be inclusive, you do need to be able to tell people, like, this is not okay. You need to stop this now because it's unfair to everybody else in the situation. And third warning, strike, you're out. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, creating safe spaces, I think, goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And just making people feel like, no, this is not, it's not normal for them to do this. You're okay.
Yeah.
You know?
And generally, as a rule, like, what I used to just put whatever my thoughts were out on the internet, like back when LiveJournal was a thing, I would actually do like journaling and stuff like that. But what I've decided to do as a proactive approach is to just put like happy things on there. Like,
right.
I put a picture of like a Brood action figure, a Brood from the X-Men. It's just like a little alien guy with like my little Monster High glasses on. So it's just like looking so fresh and so fly. So I put silly things like that on my Instagram.
Was it so clean.
So clean. It was Brood times. Good times. Times. Yeah, so, you know, just fun things out there and like sharing things that I'm excited about.
Right.
Because there's so much, it's kind of a cesspool on the internet. Like,
yes.
It's just kind of a complain box sometimes. And so you see so much of that, that to counter that, you know, you just put like fun things and things that you enjoy. And a lot of my friends, we just share things that we like.
Yeah.
And it's kind of creating that safe space of just let's share fun things that we found on the internet.
Mark Waid and Grant Morrison once defined the internet as the Phantom Zone. You have all these disembodied voices yelling horrible things at you, trying to get free. It's just
right.
Like, yeah, okay, yeah.
You have levels of anonymity on mm-hmm. there, and so you can get
be
that
as small
thing.
As you like.
Yeah. Or as big as you like.
Mm-hmm. It just always strikes me as odd because comics, and I wrote this in the show notes so I wouldn't forget it. Comics can be a great medium for addressing social issues and inspiring change for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so fascinating and disheartening how it brings out like the worst in the fan base.
Yeah.
And I guess you can't, this isn't specifically for comics. I guess it's, you know, if a lady mechanic posted, you know, drinking milkshakes with other female mechanics from a repair shop, she'd probably get just the same amount of vitriol from fans of that type of car.
I think one of the problems this also highlighted is that vitriol was specifically directed by people who are very angry with the state of Marvel right now.
Mm.
So there's kind of a double-edged thing of what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an excuse, and it shouldn't be. But it seemed very focused, which was interesting to me. I was expecting there to be a little bit more of just because they were women, but it seemed to be also just a like, oh, because you're lazy and this is why Marvel sucks right now. And it's just like, well, no, you're very wrong, but that's very specific.
Yeah.
I didn't actually read any of the trolling comments.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with people blaming Marvel, the problem being diversity. Just like, no,
right,
it's
not. Not that. Yeah.
You know.
Interesting fun fact, one of the last Ms. Marvel story arcs was about trolling, and there was some guy who's like a World of Warcraft, like he worked for like a company that was like World of Warcraft, and he was kind of tired of everything. So he made this AI that would just go out and kind of like build upon itself based on what was on the internet. And it became a troll because everything on the internet was this sort of cesspool. And then like Ms. Marvel had to combat it mm-hmm. by trying to get the community together to change sort of the tide, you know, to then, you know, disseminate it. So it became a comic book in its own way.
Yeah.
I was actually
based in reality.
Kind of bored with that story until we got to the last panel.
Yeah.
And I actually was moved to tears by the last panel of the story, and
they
I scanned it.
They happen to do that where...
Because every once in a while, I'm like, I don't think that Ms. Marvel is for me anymore, or I don't think it ever really was, and that's okay, but I think I'm probably going to drop off the subscription list. And that story in particular, I'm like, okay, I've kind of seen this before, but then we get to the last panel, and I'm like, oh, I scanned it, and I put it on my Facebook page.
Some real heartwarming moments in Ms. Marvel. I've been brought almost to tears by that series. They really hit it.
No,
sometimes.
I totally cried. Yeah. Like down my cheek.
Oh, yeah. Man tear. Just like, psh, like splashed on the page.
Just tears, Nicole.
Just human tears. Just emotions.
Just single tear rolling down your cheek,
no,
splashing
like,
on the page.
Like a couple.
It's
all right.
Epic.
It was ugly crying, okay?
Deep sobbing.
All right, fine. Are you happy now?
I am so happy.
My thank you for sharing, Cole. No. Very vulnerable of you. My whole thing is just not to engage, and that's I've always been kind of taught that my entire life, and I was, you know, the subject of bullying when I was a kid, like physical bullying, because boys are cruel. And
boys get more physical than girls. Girls are emotional. They'll crush your soul.
Yeah. That's what I hear. No, I've heard stories of what
I've been bullied
girls
before.
Will say to other high school girls.
They figure out what your weakness is, and they do it until you cry, ugly cry. Yeah.
That's harsh.
You need to weaponize that.
Yes.
But boys will just punch you and try to drown you in the swimming pool.
And then say it was an accident. Yeah.
And like I just like ran away and told the teacher, you know, because that's what I thought was best for me. But now looking back, I wish I had fought back, because that's one of the things that I learned about bullies, like as you grow up, is like, you know, if you fight back, you're like, all right, I'm going to leave you alone now, and then go on to the next person.
Right.
But it's a very self-centered sort of sort of response.
So those who know me well, the last couple of years, I've been very public about my anxiety disorder. And one of the reasons why I became very public about that is I felt like I finally found the root of that. Of what that was after being in therapy since I was 18 and taking pills throughout my 20s and that sort of thing. And it goes back to being bullied.
Yeah.
It goes back to being physically, emotionally assaulted throughout my childhood. And actually on into when I was in graduate school.
Really?
Yeah, I got I was actually physically assaulted by bigger boys when I got to grad school. That it sticks with you. But when I started looking at... Now things have finally fallen into place for me, is why I respond to the world the way I do, because my father taught me not to fight back. I could not fight back. He instilled in me the belief that it would be far worse for me if I did. And I love and respect my father, but man, I wonder how I'd be able to cope with the world if I could have broken a couple of faces.
You and I need to go back and revisit our childhood.
You need some beers and some dude time, guys.
Ben Lawrence, I still remember these guys' names.
Okay, now I'm flashing to Adam Sandler calling Steve Buscemi and apologizing, and Steve Buscemi marking his name off a list.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah.
What's that from?
Was that Happy Gilmore?
That was Billy Madison.
Oh, maybe that was Billy Madison. Yeah. It was Billy Madison.
I don't remember the guy's name who bullied me in high school, but I do remember his face very well, and I remember not being able to breathe in the high school pool. Ooh. Anyway, what a pleasant little topic we had.
You know what, though? Let me put this button on it, that I think I found my way to comics as a result of a lot of that experience.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that was my escape.
Yeah.
My safety net was comic books.
And
that was
my place.
That was my world of escape from a lot of that stuff. And I think that's why trolls are so protective of, boy trolls are so protective of that world, because that's the safe place they went to escape from the abuses of the outside world.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, we can move on now.
So... create safe spaces,
yes,
Chris. Fight them with better
community
things.
Community and better things.
Be bigger.
Be bigger. Great. Thank you, everybody. That helps a lot. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And Chris Casso, let's start with you. What do you got for us, sir?
So I saw in our order forms there was this manga that looked interesting, but it was like book 7. I'm like, well, I want to see if I could get book 1, because I thought I kind of wanted to learn more about it, but I thought our coworker Leanne would. And Leanne and I have kind of our own little mini book club where we trade off manga. And so I ordered it, and before I even got it out of the shipment this week, she was just like, I think I ordered this. I'm like, no.
We passed her box, and she was like, why wasn't that on my list?
Yeah. So it's called The Seventh Gardens, Story and Art by Mitsu Izumi. It was very interesting. It's it kind of takes place in a alternate world, maybe a different planet, where things seem kind of medieval, but it looks like there's maybe a little bit of technology. It's a little vague on that, but there's a religion called Antiquaristianity. I don't know. It's the most widespread religion in the world, and the main character stumbles across a pit in his garden, and he finds like a woman that's been asleep there for who knows how long, and she wakes up and she's like, oh yeah, I'm a demon, and and she's just like, give me your soul, and we're gonna go kill the angels. And he's just like, what? And it's kind of comedic, like she's a little silly, but she
oh yeah, I'm a demon before I have my coffee.
Yeah. Exactly. And but it turns out that the religion in charge, they're doing some shady stuff. They're purging small towns on the orders of bishops, and the bishops talk to angels, and angels have powers. And it seems like the demon is from the race of angels, and maybe she fell, but she's not necessarily the bad guy. And it's a little, there's a bit of mystery involved, like maybe the angels aren't like celestial, maybe they're highly advanced scientifically or something like that. It teases you with a lot of little bits and pieces. But it's a beautiful artwork, interesting characters. The main character is a gardener, and the home that he lives in, that he serves at, is like his peaceful garden, and he wants to protect the garden from the rest of the world. And the demon's like, I'll help you protect the garden if you help me kill a bunch of angels. Yeah, very good action, interesting characters, nice premise, only $10, and it's like the first out of 7 volumes. So, Seventh Garden from Shonen Jump and Viz Media.
Cool. Excellent. Great. Thanks a lot, Chris. Cole Hornaday, what do you got?
Yes, Ben Lawrence. I read the first three issues of Marvel Disney's latest Star Wars Darth Vader series, and I'm super duper pleased for a number of reasons. Now, the series is written by Charles Soule, and drawn by Giuseppe
Carmunkely.
Thank you, Chris, because I had it all laid out. See, I'm too busy flipping through it, re-experiencing it. So this, unlike the previous Darth Vader series, which fell between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, this falls immediately after our favorite moment in Revenge of the Sith, which is Darth Vader stepping off the operating table and screaming the famous, "No!"
Did he like the rewrite?
And yes, very much. Yeah. And so this is his story from that point forward. And they start answering some of those nagging little questions. Why, if Luke inherited Anakin's lightsaber, was it not red? And we get to learn why the Sith lightsabers are red and those kinds of things. But Palpatine sends him on a quest, and this is Vader's vision quest, to essentially find his evil self. The first stop on the journey is to go up against one of the last surviving Jedi's that's not been destroyed by Order 66, and I can't remember the fellow's name, but basically he's a socially unacceptable war Jedi who lives by himself and meditates and basically is just pulled out of dry dock to go kill people. And who better to go up against than the Lord of the Sith? So thoroughly enjoying this series because, once again, it takes the stories from the prequels that were really lackluster and really disappointing for a lot of us, namely me, and reinforms them, restructures them, fleshes them out and gives them more room to breathe and more dimension. And that's precisely what's happening in this Darth Vader series.
Nice. Cool. All right. Thanks a lot, Cole.
You're welcome.
And Nicole, what do you got for us?
So I'm also on a little bit of a manga kick because we had a sale and the thing that I've been eyeing in the store was finally on sale. It's called Nurse Hitomi's Monster Infirmary Volume 1. And its story and art is by Shaco. Finally, a name I can pronounce. So this is very much like Monster High, but if it was a little bit more coming of age and a manga. And it focuses on this nurse who is a cyclops. She's also very busty, and they make jokes about it throughout. But each chapter in this first volume focuses on different girls who are dealing with different coming of age things. Like, one girl has an awkwardly long tongue and it just like falls out and it's like very embarrassing for her. There's an undead girl who's like constantly like being clumsy and like falling to pieces all the time, and she needs to learn to be more careful. A giant girl and a tiny girl who might have a love interest between each other. It's like they had a long friendship, but then they started, like, one started growing really tall and one was really tiny, and the tiny one always took care of the giant one, and now their roles are kind of different because of their monster abilities, and but I think they love each other. So yeah. And then there's the invisible girl who, you guessed it, didn't really want to be seen by people and is invisible, and then she has to come out of her shell and become more visible. But then her clothes become transparent and gets very awkward.
Oops.
Yeah. So this is considered older teen, 16 plus. Right. There's nothing like super mature about it, but it's just really cute, really cheeky. And like, the nurse herself has the last chapter actually starts focusing a little bit more on her and her life, like her own love life. Also, her father's a bear. Which is just a random thing. Like, by the way, my pops is just a big old black bear. So it's very cute. It's like what you would consider of like a cheeky like manga.
Please tell me the bear wears like dad clothes.
Oh my God, wait, hold on a second. Yeah. I think he does. Like, they're in a mall, and of course they're in a mall and just being silly.
And like
and
a hat
like
and carries
that.
A briefcase.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he's got like
business
overalls
bear.
Or something.
That's
like
good.
That,
that's acceptable.
Know? Oh, yeah, he's got, like, a vest and a button-down shirt. So there he is. He's got slacks, aww, a vest, a button-down, aww, shirt, and little glasses. And he reads tiny books because, nice, he's a big guy.
Can you scan that page and send it to me?
Absolutely. Yeah. So maybe we can put those in the show notes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was super fun, and I was like, okay, well, you know, I'm just going to read this one volume. I like to read just random one volumes and then just kind of be done with it. But I got curious, and I was like, maybe I do want to keep reading this. Well, of course, they're not available anymore from Diamond. This did come out like 3 years ago, so still, I've been obviously eyeing this for a little too long. So I would say, you know, if you go to a place where they don't order from Diamond, but they do manga, you know, and you like that sort of thing, sounds like your jam, then I would say look it up. But a comic book store is going to have trouble getting anything past, like, one. Right. So it was fun, but it's also bittersweet. It's and like if, Monster
check
High.
Amazon. Yeah.
And if you live in Seattle, there's a great Asian American bookstore in the International District connected to
Wajimaya,
the name of which I don't remember, but it's right there in the same building.
Yeah,
and
I can't remember.
Bet you anything they have.
And that's where I bought I'm a Hero. Sorry.
Yeah,
but I was stuck over there for like 3 hours.
I might have
I need something to read, so I wanted a good chunk of reading.
Place.
Yeah, check it out.
Maybe.
All right. Cool. Yeah, Nurse Satomi's
Monster Infirmary.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. And that is Book Report, and that is our show. But coming up is quiz time. And before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. Also, as we record this, this episode is coming out on August 28th, but today is actually August 9th. And I wanted to do this two episodes ago, but I forgot. I want to give a shout out to the Panel Jumper Live's awesome stage manager and
Amanda
production.
Ray.
Amanda Ray's birthday is today.
It's today.
Happy birthday, Amanda Ray.
She's like 19, I think. Yeah.
If that.
She's just a whippersnapper. Yeah.
All right. And but also brought to you by the Comics Dungeon here, 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to send us some quiz time questions, do it at that email address. Otherwise, get your quiz hats on, everybody. It's quiz time. And this week, our questions come to us from Chris Casso. Lay it on us, Chris.
This one is called Silent Audibles. And the first one, I think, Cole, you'll get this immediately. Originally published in 1990 into a four-issue comic book miniseries, this series adapted Fritz Lang's first sound film from 1931 that followed the story of a serial killer. Originally released with a flexi-disc soundtrack, the adapter and artist of this tense suspense story is also known for his music, painted art, and children's books. Mm-hmm. What is the name of the creator and the name of the series?
The John J. Muth, and it's M, Fritz Lang's M.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
Beautiful artwork.
Yeah. Yes, very. It's the book. I highly recommend the book. It goes in and out of print, and I highly recommend it.
And I just got the flexi-disc coming through the store like a week ago.
Yeah.
Next question. Written by Martin Green with art by comics legend Bill Sienkiewicz. This hardcover comic followed guitar legend Jimi Hendrix in his short and turbulent life. This collaborative tribute to Hendrix, described by one of its creators as not so much outright biography as speculative fantasy, explores the excitement and the pitfalls of rock stardom sympathetically and perceptively. Much of the text was drawn from Hendrix's own letters, poetry, and lyrics, and it also included a CD collecting 7 previously unreleased tracks written and performed by Hendrix. What was the name of the book?
Ben, have you heard of this?
I haven't.
It came and went, and I missed it. I want to say Kiss the Sky, but that's not right. Okay.
Voodoo Child.
Voodoo Child, of course.
The illustrated legend of Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
It's a shame that Jimi Hendrix had to go back home so early.
Yeah,
leaving here when he was Earth Age 27. Anyway, keep going.
Earth Age.
Written by Coheed and Cambria frontman Claudio Sanchez, the story of this comic series is also the focus of the band's music. Each studio album released by the band tells a chapter in the science fiction saga originally narrated by Sanchez's lyrics. Many individual songs on these albums use a particular song structure known as terminally climactic form in order to depict a particularly violent action from the comic books once in a pivotal moment only heard at the song's ending. What is the name of this still ongoing saga currently published by Boom Studios?
Amory Wars.
Yes, the Amory Wars.
Amory Wars.
Amory Wars. There's quite a few volumes of that now. Next question.
The Good Apollo is currently happening.
Yeah, that's the current one. This DC comic superheroine had a new EP on her own Bandcamp website in 2016 titled Kicking and Screaming, a collection of songs for broken gods and superwomen whose electro-rock feel has been compared to Metric. The EP supplements the graphic novel of the same name in which this character sings lead vocals for her self-titled band that she also trains to become a superhero team. The songs feature the writing and performing talents of comic co-author Brendan Fletcher and Montreal-based musicians Joseph Donovan of The Receivers and Michelle Bennison of Caveboy. Who is this longtime DC superheroine?
Is it the Black Canary stuff?
Yep.
Ah.
Yeah, there's a full Bandcamp website with all
cool.
the songs.
Wow.
Yeah. Talk about transmedia.
Yeah.
And last one, this comic book theme song was created by then Marvel series in 2006. Marvel series editor Nick Lowe and his brother Matt by their band Thunder Thighs. It was advertised on their MySpace page, which is still up, and lyrics were printed in the director's cut edition of the first issue of this cult comic series. Timeless lyrics include, "It's like Shakespeare, but with lots more punching." What was the series and who wrote it? It's one of your favorites.
This is one of my favorites?
From Marvel. It features a Tyrannosaurus Rex wearing a smoking jacket.
That should narrow it
that
down.
That really should.
Don't look at
Wait,
me.
Wait. Is it... What? Is it... Why is this not coming to me?
The first name of the writer is Warren.
Okay, it is that one. Then.
It's Next Wave.
It is Next Wave.
It was Next
it's
Wave?
It's been so
Next
long.
Wave.
Like, that's why
really?
It's, like, so vague
Next
in my
Wave's
brain.
Like 2006.
Yeah, that's when
I read
I
Next
last
Wave,
read
but I didn't
Next...
realize it had that connection there,
yeah,
to
there's,
it.
Yeah,
when I last
yeah.
read it. So
if you get a chance, I'll put it, we'll put it in the show notes. I'll embed a YouTube video of it. I love the song. It's, it's the Next Wave theme song by Thunder Thighs.
That's
I have
right.
no idea.
Okay, it's coming back now. It's coming back. I gotta reread that series.
Right, who
it's
who
been
wrote
forever.
Next Wave? It was
Warren Ellis.
Warren Ellis and Steve Eminem, right?
Yeah, and when did the art? Yeah.
Yeah, the art's great. It's just, it's great throughout.
In fact,
yeah.
T-Rex
in a smoking jacket.
I was in a play where they referenced Next Wave.
Nice. All of us need to read it again.
Though. Yeah, you're right. Actually, I was thinking that the other day.
And all of you need to read it too. And while you're reading it, we're going to take a break. But we will see you next week. Thank you, Chris, for those questions.
Thank you.
On the Perfect Bound Podcast. Goodbye, y'all.
Bye.